This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Quote now at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Hello and welcome to This Day in Esoteric Political History from Radiotopia. My name is Jody Avergan. This day, April 30th, 2015, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders walked outside of the Senate and held a 10-minute news conference to announce that he was running for the next year's Democratic nomination for president. Here to talk about it, as always, is Nicole Hemmer. Nikki, hello.
Hello, Jody.
So we don't have to do a postmortem what happened to Bernie in 2020. We don't have to do a would Bernie have won in 2016 kind of thing. I feel like this is more of our chance to both look at why Bernie got into the race to begin with, and then what he symbolized and meant, and kind of what the Bernie era has meant. But can you remind us, actually, when Bernie walked out and gave that 10-minute news conference, which I believe began with the words, "I don't have much time, so I'm going to be brief," which is very Bernie. What did we know about him? Who was he, and what did it mean for him to get in the race?
Well, he was this idiosyncratic senator from Vermont. He was someone who had a reputation as something of a curmudgeon. He could be a bit difficult to pin down. You didn't always know where he was going to land on issues. And he hadn't been a member of the Democratic Party. Yeah. He was somebody who described himself as a socialist. So he seemed, I have to say, at the time when Hillary Clinton looked like a lock for the Democratic nomination, it really did seem like this out of the blue sort of stunt campaign.
So when did that start to shift for you? I mean, do you remember when you got a sense of, oh, there's something going on here with Bernie?
Well, I think that the way that he talks about his campaign, both in that very first speech and then in a bigger one that he gives a little bit later when he's kind of officially rolling things out, he's touching on issues like inequality, like the 99% that had been brought to the surface during the Occupy movement a few years earlier. And the Occupy movement had been kind of dismissed by most political reporters as, you know, the post-recession movement that failed. The Tea Party had succeeded, Occupy had fizzled out. But here was Bernie Sanders running for president, and he had all of those issues as his issues, and people were responding to them. Huge crowds of people were showing up at his rallies, and that seemed to signal that something was going on.
Yeah, and I think this context of Occupy is so important with Bernie. I mean, this is no great insight, but I do think sometimes people forget to sort of extend the timeline back a couple years. In one specific way, I just remember at the time, his use of the 1% and the 99%, it's like there's already language that's in the ether that has worked. To then pick that up, it sort of gives you a head start. And I mean, obviously, Bernie, very thoughtful, had conviction and had thought all this stuff through, but he also had language to tap into and a kind of language that had already activated a bunch of young people on the internet and all the things that kind of ended up helping him. But he could just start right off the bat saying 1%, 99%, and know that it was going to be effective.
Right. He didn't have to pull out a chart and start explaining where wealth was accruing in the United States. He could just say, we are the 99%. Right. And suddenly everyone knows just what he's talking about and the whole suite of issues that he's bringing to the table, whether it is a $15 minimum wage or health care for every American. That was something that people were already very much primed for by the time his campaign showed up.
Yeah, I mean, it's like 99% did a lot of the hard work of just making it an issue that people cared about. And then Bernie was able to push forward. I mean, you mentioned crowd size and rallies. And I covered the 2016 election very closely. And, you know, I have thought a lot about, both with Bernie and with Donald Trump, what to make of the rallies and the quote unquote buzz. Because, you know, I come from a kind of journalism that tries to hold some of those things a little bit at arm's length. 538 certainly was built in opposition to all the reporting that would talk about yard signs or enthusiastic voters and then extrapolate to a bunch of people, and it tries to be a little more dispassionate. But, you know, I also felt like in 2016, you would walk into a Bernie rally and you could just feel that there was something there. And you walked into a Trump rally and you could feel the same thing. You could feel that energy. I don't think you discount it. And I don't know if that's one of the lessons of the 2016 election with Bernie and with Trump, is this is like when someone feels like they have that it factor, at least it means give them a second look or something.
And that it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to win elections, right? It doesn't mean that they're going to bring out the most voters. It doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to be a successful campaign in that sense. But it does say that there is a powerful politics that they're tapping into. Mm-hmm. And if the issues that they are bringing up are not addressed in some way, you're going to have a problem. And I think that that's something that we've seen in these kind of candidacies, you know, throughout U.S. presidential history, at least, is that those candidates like Bernie Sanders are letting you know that something is happening in the electorate that you need to pay attention to.
We saw that just in this last month when Barack Obama endorsed Joe Biden. He also explicitly talked about how the Democratic Party had moved to the left. And I think part of that was trying to open his arms to the Bernie wing of the party. But I also think it was a real assessment of Bernie's legacy and his impact. I know we're just a few weeks out, and who knows what lays ahead for Bernie Sanders, but is that the one sentence that we can say about Bernie Sanders from the moment we're talking about here when he walked out of, in 2015 to when he dropped out in his second run at the Democratic nomination? Did he really move this party to the left, particularly on economic issues?
Yeah, I mean, look at the issues he was talking about in 2015 that the Clinton campaign and lots of other people just kind of laughed off, whether it was Medicare for All, whether it was the much higher minimum wage, whether it was a much broader social safety net. It was all seen as kind of crazy, right? It was just too far left for what people believed the electorate would embrace. And by the time you get to 2020, when you have all of these candidates on stage who are arguing for some version of Medicare for All, who are pretty much all on board with a $15 minimum wage, who have embraced the politics of inequality, the DNC was not willingly walking toward those issues because it's been a more centrist party. So it is a remaking of the party, and Bernie Sanders was the conduit for that.
So that said, a lot of the last 4 years has felt like the Democrats are a party that are not shifting, but splitting. And so how does Bernie Sanders fit into a longer history of candidates who felt like they've potentially been a threat to split a party? I mean, I'll give you one example of someone I think about a lot in the context of Bernie Sanders, and that's Howard Dean, actually, who I think really remade the Democratic Party, doesn't get as much credit as possible for tapping into a true leftist strain in the Democratic Party, but then also like remaking the party and just sort of bringing it into the 21st century. But like Dean, you tell me if I'm wrong, but Dean never felt like, oh, this is a person who might just fracture this whole thing. He felt like someone who was pushing a party. Whereas Bernie, you know, for better or worse, felt like, oh, gosh, there's a potential full split at stake here.
I think that at least part of what Dean was doing was he was very much seen as a populist candidate, but he was pioneering all of these new techniques that Bernie Sanders would really benefit from. He's really the first digital campaign in 2004. He's the one who's using the websites like, what was that website called? Meetup?
Yeah, Meetup.
Yeah, he would use Meetup in order to organize people. And we were just starting to get the digital infrastructure that would allow people to do small donations to fund a campaign, which wasn't possible back when you were writing checks instead of being able to use the digital infrastructure to do small dollar donations. And that's something that Sanders uses not only to bring money in for his campaign, but to show that it really is a populist grassroots movement. Yeah. But when it came to like actually splitting the party, you know, Dean's campaign fizzles fairly early on in the primaries. I think one of the reasons that Sanders has a reputation as a splitter is both because he wasn't a member of the party, but because his challenge to Clinton lasted almost all the way to the convention. And for those kinds of fissures, I think you have to look back even further to like the 1968 campaign, when there really is an ideological, policy-based difference for what the party should look like. Should it be the party of LBJ and New Deal liberalism, or should it be the party of the new left and young people, which was embodied by people like Bobby Kennedy? And that difference felt irreconcilable, and the party does split in two over it and ultimately moves in a more centrist direction after McGovern loses in 72. So these kinds of splits can go badly for a party, or can go not in the direction that the reformers want.
All right. Well, for those of you scoring at home, that is our umpteenth reference to 1968, I suppose it will be something we reference many, many, many times. Given the year we're living through, I suspect we will be reaching to that again. But Nikki, are there any other historical parallels you want to bring up before we have to go?
I do think that Sanders is more the William Jennings Bryan of the Democratic Party. Bryan was a populist who was running in the late 19th century. He was the standard bearer for the Populist Party, which was this third party that had sprung up in order to challenge both the Republicans and Democrats. And the Democrats end up nominating him as well. And what ends up happening is Bryan loses, obviously. He doesn't become president of the United States. But the Democratic Party, in order to try to capture all of those populist votes, moves to the left. It sort of cherry picks the most popular parts of the populist platform and run with it. And I think you're seeing something really similar today with the Sanders platform.
Third party is definitely something we're going to touch on in the future because it is in the ether, and I'm curious to see what lessons from the past we have for it. But that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you, as always, Nicole Hemmer.
Thank you, Jody.
This Day in Esoteric Political History is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX. You can find out lots more about the show, including how to suggest topics, at thisdaypod.com. Remember to follow us on social, Twitter, and Instagram at thisdaypod. We're posting lots more there every day about other interesting historical moments. Our researcher and producer is Jacob Feldman. Next Tuesday, we'll talk a little bit more about William Jennings Bryan and the 19th century's populist movement as we look at the Panic of 1893. That's next time. My name is Jody Avergan. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you soon.
We don't have an endless amount of time. I've got to get back. Let me just say this. The question is, if you raise the issues that are on the hearts and minds of the American people, if you try to put together a movement which says our country belonged to all of us and not the billionaire class, that's not raising an issue. That is winning elections. That's where the American people are.
Radiotopia.